Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 52. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars, amps, pedals, music, and all, I am conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Chime in with comments and such on the Facebook page. You'll find information on the blog and show notes at theguitarpodcast.net/blog. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook, and that's where you'll find where people can chime in with comments and questions and other things. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts where you'll get email notifications when a new episode has been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. So today we have several different things we want to talk about. Do I want to talk about the weather? No. Do I want to talk about Peyton Manning's neck? No. I want to talk about guitars. All right, so first off, I want to talk about something that, I mean, this is kind of going to be kind of a smorgasbord, a little bit. I want to cover like three topics overall, and two briefly, and one a little more in depth. But so if I tend to ramble today in my commute to work in my mobile podcasting studio, bear with me, please. I know you've heard it before, so, and you're still listening, so that's great. First off, I wanted to say that I got my issue of Guitar Player magazine arrived in the beginning of September. I always look forward to it, and they have the 50 greatest rhythm guitar players, and I thought that was great that they're covering that, because it's something that I think a lot of guitar players overlook. Because everybody, well, when I was growing up, everybody wanted to be either, you know, Eddie Van Halen or Yngwie Malmsteen or Steve Vai, George Lynch. You can go on and on. All the great, fast guitar players of the day in rock. But if you overlook the rhythm aspect, I think your elite guitar player's effectiveness is going to be limited. Because you have to have a great sense of rhythm for phrasing and where to play, where not to play, and where to come in, where not to come in, all that sort of stuff. But I did like that they didn't rank them like here's number one, here's two, and this guy's the last or whatever. I mean, you would think that there is some sort of hierarchy that they have who they mentioned first. It's not number one or anything. You know, I think that what they've done is they've listed them in alphabetical order. So it's just a normal list. And I like that. I think that's really cool. And some of the guys they mention on there, I think it's great that they were mentioned as great rhythm guitar players and not, you know, oh, well, some of them are well, Eddie Van Halen is one that I'm so glad that they mentioned his rhythm guitar playing, because he's, you know, considered, whenever you think of Eddie Van Halen, you think of how awesome his lead playing was. You think of Eruption, you're like, oh my goodness, just how that blew everybody's mind. But, you know, if you can master some of his leads, well, what do you think of his rhythm playing? Have you tried some of his rhythms? Like 5150 is not an easy rhythm to play. Some things are a little easier that he did, but it was always very creative. He's always been very creative with his rhythm and covering so much ground as the only guitar player in the band. So I thought that was really cool that they mentioned that. And, of course, you know, James Hetfield, who could possibly be one of the coolest guitar players ever, or at least of the last maybe 40 years, just his stage presence, his whole ambience, his how he played, how he revolutionized metal guitar. And they mentioned Joe Perry too, who I wouldn't consider one of the great lead guitar players, but just the cool factor. That's a whole nother episode about cool factor. I've talked with a friend about that before. I need to do an episode on the cool factor. And basically if if I could have any stage presence of any guitar player, as far as the cool factor is concerned, Joe Perry would have it. Joe Perry of Aerosmith is just way, way too cool. Perfect name, Joe. Joe Cool. So, anyway, you know, I'm not endorsed by any, you know, I don't have any endorsements, any advertisers on the site or anything like that, but, you know, I'd encourage you to go ahead and pick that up and read through that and then, you know, think about your rhythm guitar playing. Think about what you may be able to learn from some of the guys that are listed there, or maybe they list one of your guitar heroes. You may say, oh, well, you know, maybe I need to look at my hero, my guitar hero, a little bit different and dig in a little more. Or maybe somebody who you've never, ever, ever heard of before and possibly a genre you've never played, like Joe Pass, he's listed there. You know, give him a listen. Go, what does he have to offer? I don't play jazz. I don't play, or a country picker. I don't play country, you know. Well, what could you use? What could you learn from this guy? I mean, obviously, you know, they're well-known names in their genres and in guitardom, so to speak. But, you know, I firmly believe that improving your rhythm playing will improve your lead playing. And, you know, if you're playing in a garage band or in front of, you know, 20 people at a bar, or you know, thousands of people at a club, a big club or whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. You're playing with other people, and your rhythm is very important to being able to play effectively with others. Yeah, guitar player plays nice with others. It's very important because we kind of get a bad rap because, well, many of us don't have good rhythm. It's very important to have good rhythm if you're going to play with others. Playing with a metronome, playing with a drummer, playing with a bass player who has really good rhythm. You know, if you're only able to play with one person, that's a great thing. I think, you know, when I was growing up, I played with a bass player, and that helped my rhythm quite a bit. It was always great because a bass player adds that percussive element and timing, as well as the chord structure under whatever you're playing, whether you're playing a lead or rhythm part. So, you know, either way, the neighbors are going to complain when you play with a drummer or bass player, just because the bass penetrates everything, no matter how loud it is. And then the drums, you know, the popping of the drums is going to annoy the neighbors too. So, you know, if you can't do either, a metronome is a great way to do it. Or develop a riff track, you know, with GarageBand or any, you know, or Audacity. Record yourself playing with a metronome so that you keep your timing right, and then play with that, play over that. Or listen to what your rhythm is doing. Listen and see, you know, listen to yourself back just with the metronome and go, oh my, that wasn't good, or I can't believe I can't keep time, or hey, this is really good, but here's an opportunity for improvement, that sort of thing. So there's my two cents on rhythm guitar for now. Something I think I'll probably talk about quite a bit more on another episode in the future, maybe do some videos on it. Anyway, so next topic is, last week we got the news blasts that the feds had invaded the Gibson guitar factory in Nashville and confiscated all kinds of wood and so on and so forth. And I don't want to comment on it too much. I just do want to acknowledge that it happened, and it is a curious situation, and it's something I'm keeping my eye on to see what may happen. You know, I watched the press conference with their CEO, read some articles, and I have definitely heard some, you know, comments and dialogue among other people on blogs and forums, and it's just it's a strange situation because it seems as though Gibson did everything that they were supposed to, that they filed everything correctly, that they, you know, did what they were supposed to. And this is not the first time they've been raided by the feds and had wood confiscated and been basically, you know, effectively shut down. Of course, the CEO has stated that he's going to continue on. They're going to, you know, he's taking it on his own, on his shoulders. They're going to march on. And I mean, that's no secret. He said that in the press conference, you know, right when they got raided. So, you know, I think what the big thing is that they're saying is that that Gibson is violating, a foreign country's law, and that, if the wood was refined in or manufactured in another country, it couldn't be further refined in the United States. That it had to come here in a raw state and completely refined for, you know, manufacturing for the use on a guitar here, or everything needed to be done overseas before it ever got placed onto a guitar. So, but the curious part of it is that Gibson is stating, and they're not naming names, they're not saying this company or that company, but other companies import the same woods the same way and do the same thing, and they were not raided. So that's what's curious. There's been speculation that it is a political thing, that they're a non-union shop, and of course, with a Democrat in the White House, perhaps, and Democrats are much more into unions than, say, Republicans are, that there's speculation that may play a role in this. I don't know. This show isn't about politics. I'm just kind of relaying information and how I'm seeing things. But as far as that's concerned, I don't know how much that plays into it. It is a curious situation and an interesting factor in this whole thing, that other companies I'm not going to name that do the same practice, apparently do the same practice, are union shops and support the Democratic National Committee and are supporters of the Democratic Party, whereas Gibson is apparently a supporter of the Republican Party in a non-union shop. So, you know, does that play into it? I don't really know. You know, governments have done stranger things in the past. I know people say these things can't happen today, but they, you know, you look around the world at what's been going on in other countries. And you could say it can't happen here, but it, you know, things like this, they happen here. They have happened here. So I'm going to keep my eye on this situation. You know, I dearly love my Gibson guitars, and I think Gibson is an American iconic company, and a big success, an American success story from the beginning. And of course, they went through their dark years through the 70s into the early 80s, very similar to what happened with Fender, with Harley Davidson, and several other companies. But they recovered and they've become a worldwide leader in guitar manufacturing and quality and you know, even in the dark years, my SG is a 74. It was made in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and that's part of the dark, one of the, you know, the dark years of Gibson and the Norlin years, and it's still, the guitar's great. I love it. Sounds great. Plays great. And my Les Paul is an 87 when they were coming out of the Norlin years, when they were making improvements and with quality and manufacturing and so on. And it's a great guitar. I love that guitar. That's like the one, to quote Charlton Heston, "For my cold dead hands." That guitar's great. Other speculation, and this is clearly, I want to be very clear about this. This is just people talking and speculating and possibly some fear-mongering and tinfoil hattery. And if you don't know what tinfoil hattery is, I mean, basically what that is when I talk about that is when the conspiracy theorists, that they're all getting coming out to get us, and they're going to round us up or confiscate everything, or you know, all, you know, just a little bit crazy, okay? I'll just leave it at that. Like, the government's got some satellite that's reading your mind, so you wear a tinfoil hat to keep them from reading your mind. That's tinfoil hattery. When I talk about the tinfoil hat brigade, so to speak, that's what I'm talking about. And to be clear on that too, I'm not a member of the tinfoil hat brigade, okay? But I just use that to clearly define that what, you know, the conspiracy theorists or the tinfoil hat brigade. So, anyway, to get to the point, people are concerned that the feds are going to come around and confiscate guitars that were manufactured with Brazilian rosewood or rosewood from Madagascar, ebony from Madagascar and Africa and other places, that they're concerned that that's going to take place. Because, and even guitars that were made before the Lacey Act was strengthened recently. So, I really doubt that they will do this. I would see this along the lines of like gun confiscation and gold confiscation or food confiscation, you know, things that the Tinfoil Hat Brigade thinks is going to happen, you know, I really doubt that it's going to happen. That's my two cents on it. Could it? Certainly, anything could happen. You never know. You know, governments wield power however they please at times. And it's really up to the people to say, you know, you've come this far, no further. Enough is enough. But you know, and if the people don't, well, the government's going to do whatever they want to. But I really doubt that I think this part is more along the lines of fear-mongering and saying, they're going to come and get your guitars, they're going to confiscate your guitars because it has rosewood or ebony from Madagascar or whatever, or Brazilian rosewood, and they're going to, you know, if they do that to just Gibsons, well, you know, why wouldn't they look at Taylors that have Brazilian rosewood or Martins or other high-end guitars that utilize these exotic tone woods. So, you know, it's really hard to believe that they would do that or go into a millionaire's home who has a 59 Les Paul worth $300,000 and confiscate it because it has that wood in it. It was manufactured long before the Lacey Act was pushed through and strengthened as it has been in recent years. So, I'm sure several of you are concerned about that. I got an email or two about it, and some comments on the Facebook page regarding the Lacey Act and the raid at Gibson. And I just wanted to cover that somewhat briefly because I'm sure you're all concerned and you're asking about it, and just wanted to give you my two cents on it without getting too detailed. Because it's something that's, I don't think this is going to be the last time Gibson's raided. I think that the feds are just going to keep on picking on Gibson like this. And each time they do this, it costs Gibson about $1 million in goods, in production, in materials. Because they confiscate all this great wood that, you know, they need for manufacturing. If they don't have the materials to manufacture guitars, they can't manufacture the guitars. But I don't think Gibson's going to get shut down, you know, government takeover, you know, Supreme Court, you're shut down, no more Gibson guitars and confiscate. I don't see that happening. I just don't. I am an optimist, really. I think that, you know, for the most part, I look on the bright side of things and I try to live in reality, not in the tinfoil hat brigade. So, I think that, you know, if it is a political thing and they really don't have anything to stand on, they'll just keep on picking on Gibson. About every 18 months, they'll probably raid and grab stuff, and the CEO will be like, I don't get it. This is ridiculous. And, you know, at that point, I'm somewhat, if Gibson doesn't have anything really to hide, why don't they, you know, take the feds to court? Maybe that's a question, you know, that maybe that's a dumb question, since I don't know law. It's a crazy situation, folks. But I really just think that Gibson's going to get picked on by the feds over and over and over again. I don't think that this situation's really going to resolve, especially if it's a political thing. I think that if it is a political thing, it'll all go away once a Republican is in the White House, whenever that may be. And, you know, it always swings back and forth, from Republican to Democrat. And, you know, are they really any different? please don't send hate mail that I was talking politics on the Guitar Podcast, because I'm really not. So that's my two cents. The next topic I want to talk about, I was asked about import guitars, quality, and are they worth it, or, you know, is it, you know, what my thoughts are on import guitars. My three main guitars were made in the United States. One was made in Kalamazoo, Michigan. The other one in Nashville, Tennessee, and another one out in California. Now, I do have foreign guitars, though. I have a 12-string that was made in Taiwan, and I played the crap out of that. It was my 12-string, my Takamine 12-string from 1986, 87, I don't know what year it is. It wasn't a very expensive guitar. Obviously, it was made in Taiwan, but it's a really nice guitar and sounds great, plays pretty well, but with all the tension on it, and as old as it is, it's been folding up, and it's great. I have an early 90s Japanese Stratocaster that's really cool, really plays great and everything, and I've done a bunch of modifications to it, similar, you know, I think most people tend to do to their Strats, and they have a reputation. The 80s and 90s Japanese Strats have a really great reputation, and some people prefer them over the American Strats of that era. But I think your main focus of your question was that, you know, about now. You know, Mexican Strats, Japanese Strats, Epiphones, all sorts of other guitars that are made overseas and imported. Well, a little historic information is that whenever I was coming up in the 80s, I was in junior high, and the import guitars of that era of the early 80s, unless it was, say, a Japanese Strat, and even some of the early Japanese Strats, some of them weren't all that great. Some of them are great. But, you know, the K guitars from the 80s are really bad. There are a lot of guitars from that era that, you know, were budget guitars, and they just, they're really bad. I mean, the first guitar I had wouldn't stay in tune, and it played terribly. But I played it nonetheless because I had something to play on. I knew that I was going to develop some skills that way, and it, you know, it turned out in my favor. I'm an okay guitar player. So traffic is a little crazy this morning. Seems to be this way right here anymore. There's a traffic jam every morning when I come in. It's great. Completely stopped on I-65. You gotta laugh, folks. You gotta laugh. There's nothing I can do about it. I can't make traffic go better. But, you know, today, the import guitars that I've found, especially when it comes to Fender, their Mexican Strats are really pretty good. I mean, they're not cheap still, but they're not well into the $1,000 range like their American Strats and Standards, but Mexican Strats are really decent. the Japanese Strats, the made in Japan, the older ones are really, really good. The crafted in Japan's are really good. You know, it's just the quality of the import guitar today is a whole lot better than the quality of the import guitar of the 70s and 80s. And it goes back to so much of the quality of everything in the 70s was just not the best. Other than the music that was being made in the 70s, that was awesome. But they were using instruments from the 60s. But Marshall amps and Fender amps. Marshall amps from the 70s are really, really pretty hot. They're pretty cool. There are a lot of amps from the 70s that are still pretty, they're really cool. But nevertheless, we're talking about import guitars. So would I, at work, whenever I, on the nights that I teach, there, you know, I work at a guitar shop that has a lot of used import guitars. Get a cheap, good, used guitar there. You know, that's basically what he's known for at Brownsburg Guitars. And, you know, I tend to, when I'm doing a lesson, I don't bring in my Les Paul whenever I'm teaching a kid how to play guitar. Reason being is, you know, they could rationalize that, oh, of course, Lauren, you can play like that because you're playing on this really expensive, fancy guitar, and I'm sitting here playing this, you know, $200 guitar, you know. So what I do is I grab a guitar off the wall that is cheap. I try to grab one of the cheapest guitars on his wall and take it in there and play what I want them to play and show them that, look, I'm playing one of the cheapest, ugliest guitars in the store, and I can pull this off. So there's no excuse other than, you know, you just haven't practiced enough and you haven't played long enough. And that will come with time, and I try to encourage the student that way. But that, you know, that there's no, that they can't use the fancy guitar excuse. But he's had several guitars in there, and I don't even know the names of them. They're like made in Taiwan or Japan or China. These guitars sounded fine. And they played pretty well and stayed in tune, and I've just been very impressed with a lot of the cheap used import guitars, you know, even in the last several years. When I was playing, have been playing for the last month or so in guitar lessons, I'm sure it was made within the last 5 years, and it's an import. I think he was asking something like $250 for it. So, and that was used. So I'm guessing that new, it was probably a $400 guitar, maybe ish, somewhere around there. On a budget, I would not hesitate to get an import guitar, whether it's Fender or whatever, you know, an Epiphone. Epiphones have always just felt funny to me, and I don't know why. When I play them acoustically or unplugged, the Epiphone electrics they don't have the right sound to me, and I don't know what that is. Maybe they've improved. I just kind of avoid them. But I hate to say a Strat's a Strat. In a lot of ways, it's true. They're all fairly consistent. That model, that production line is so very consistent that you know what you're going to get whenever you pick up a Strat or a Telecaster. Fender really did a great job there. You know, no matter where it's manufactured, to just bolt on the neck and go, you know. Almost every other guitar company has taken on that model. You know, Ibanez makes great import guitars from all sorts of, you know, all sorts of price ranges, you know, very low end to very high end. The guitars are really good. So would, you know, on a budget, would I, you know, it comes to, I had an earlier podcast when I was talking about buying your first guitar, and budget plays a big role in it. And so say if, you know, you want to have a lot of guitars, you don't want to, you can't afford to buy a bunch of $1,000 guitars and so on. You know, but you can do a lot of $300, $400 guitars. You know, you've been around long enough, you let your ear and the feel of the guitar tell you what about the quality of the guitar. Plug it into good amps. And like I've said before, an amp, you know, guitar is more about feel. Do you like the way it feels when you're playing it? An amp really helps your tone. A guitar can ruin your tone, certainly. But most guitars, even cheap import guitars, through the right amp, will sound awesome. You won't even know the difference. So, you know, it goes back to amps. The quality of an amp may be more important than the quality of the guitar. So at that point, do you like the feel of the guitar? Can you play everything you want to on it? Do your hands feel good whenever does it feel like a part of you, like an old friend or something like that, you know? So, let your ear be the guide. Let your ear tell you what if the guitar is good. Let your, if it feels good, I hate to say that, if it feels good, do it. When it comes to a guitar, the feel is the biggest part of it. How it fits your body, how it fits your hands, how the frets feel. Can you bend notes well on it? Does it work for you? So, the imports are just fine. Yeah, imports of today, I think, are a lot better than the majority of the imports of, say, back in the 70s and 80s. You know, I think guitars have followed that same sort of thing as, like, if you look at the cars on the road today, how many import cars do you see on the road today, and what would you prefer? Would you prefer a Ford, a Chevy, a Dodge Chrysler at this point, or would you prefer a Toyota or a Hyundai or Honda, you know? They're all over the place. People are driving them like crazy. Now, I drive a 2000 Grand Am GT, and I've got 158,000 miles on it. My brother-in-law has a Grand Am too, and he's got 250,000 miles on his. So, this isn't a car show, but I'm just saying that a lot of things are built better today than they used to be, and last longer than they used to. I'm hoping that my answer, that I'm answering your question about import guitars. And if you have any more questions, fire back an email or post it on the Facebook page, the question. Say, hey, I'd like you to elaborate a little more on this or whatever. What may be a good idea is for me to do an episode on basically the import guitar, like somewhat of the history of Ibanez guitars and how they rose to power and why they rose to power, the prominence, and how, you know, that company grew and so on, and why, you know, Japanese Strats were so good. If this didn't really cover everything that you're looking for. So anyway, I hope that covered a lot. So that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the blog don't comment on the blog or show notes, because I'm not allowing comments there anymore because I get too much spam. Go to the show notes to find links and such. I'm probably not going to put too many links out there for this one. This is a lot of just talk. Actually, I may for the press conference with the CEO of Gibson. If you want to spend 30 minutes to listen to him talk about his confusion on that, it is a confusing situation. If you liked what you heard today, and you subscribe using iTunes or Zune, please let them know by writing a review. And if you like the Guitar Podcast on Facebook, share it with your friends. Let them know about it. And I hope you all have a great day. Thanks for tuning in again. This is Warren Pepper signing off.